Culture eats strategy for lunch, and informed cultures drive decisions and inspire action. At the Data Culture Podcast, we talk with execs, visionaries, and data experts so that you may move from idea to outcome in your own data culture journey. Welcome to the Data Culture Podcast. My name is Sid Atkinson, data culture innovator and consulting leader with over 21 years in data.
And I'm Lee Harper, AI student with over a decade doing AI stuff. And today, we're joined by Nan Dickel. So Nancy is Chief Technology Officer for Epic Advisors, the small LLC in Virginia focused on exploring passions and igniting change. In her previous role as the enterprise architect for Chesterfield County, Virginia, she was instrumental in achieving significant transformational change for the organization. Visions for cloud enablement and strategic information sharing provided the foundation for the award-winning Stratis Data Program, which we're here today to discuss that journey and how that program came to be, that serves the county with advanced and predictive data analysis. Building roadmaps and research and technology solutions and identifying business use cases for data is only part of the story. Building a culture of talent and bridging the gap of understanding of what is possible with key leaders with a true ticket to success. Nancy has two management information systems degrees from VCU and has taught undergraduate courses in multiple disciplines of IT for more than 10 years. She loves mentoring and guiding us to success. As well as being a proud mother of two children and then had three grandchildren, she plays tennis and the piano in her spare time. I believe she also is a very keen skier. So welcome, Nancy.
Thank you, Sid and Lee. I appreciate that introduction.
Today, we're going to talk about the Stratis journey. And just for our listeners, to give them a taster, we're going to talk about the whole thing. So starting from vision to how you get government stakeholders to buy in, the impact of the cloud and getting the data, early POCs, all the way through to introducing machine learning systems to generate predictive forecasts. So with that, Nancy, why don't you give us the 2-minute elevator pitch for Stratis?
Well, super proud of our accomplishment with Stratis. It was a multi-year journey that started with the cloud enablement piece that Lee mentioned. So we brought together partners with Microsoft and went to various locations. The technology center brought multiple disciplines of people across my organization, data folks, network folks, to really get our feet wet with the cloud aspects of our enablement. That was probably 2 years just to get the cloud piece of that set. And we were looking for that successful proof of concept project and looking at the offerings that Microsoft Azure offered at the time. The data enablement, the data program aspects were cloud first. And so, meaning there was a lot of feature rich opportunity there that was on the data side of what the county might need strategically. So we set a course for a vision with our what became known as the Stratis program. Early on, it didn't have a name, of course, but we did our first project after receiving funding, which funding opportunities take a little bit of effort. So a year later, we had a vision and brought in a consulting company, and we built a 3-year roadmap that kind of bridged the idea of governance projects for enablement and technology. And at that time, we did have the idea of advanced analytics and predictive analytics on our roadmap. But of course, that wasn't where we started. So getting the buy-in across the organization, it is 42 different departments across the county organization in all sorts of disciplines you can imagine. So bringing those folks together to really understand the value of their data for other parts of the organization was very important. And so we landed on something that was more public in nature, things that you might already find on our website, locality data, demographics data, census data, things like that. Did a small project to bring some of those things together. So that was some external data, some internal data, but all public in nature, and built some dashboards and this plan for the future. So that was the beginning.
There's always the story arc that is the genesis and then of an idea. And then there's also then the story behind the story. So for a little bit, Stratis probably started in one idea. And you said it wasn't even named when it started. And then it ended up somewhere else or in other places. For you and your team, what drove the need to lay the Stratis plan, and whether you had that name in the beginning or not, but what was the initial need? What was the initial impetus to do it?
At this time, we're talking about 2017-ish, most likely. Mm-hmm. The idea of unlocking the value of your data was certainly something that the industry was talking about, but I'm not sure local government was really buying in, as well as cloud enablement was. We were pretty forefront in both of those arenas. But knowing that we had a lot of data needs across our organization, I was responsible for solutioning business solutions across all of those domains, from public safety to library to parks to planning to financial systems, all of those domains. And so we were looking for ways to enable the organization to be better decision analysts. And we, during that first project, we did do a lot of discovery and did come up with a set of use cases for enabling this for the organization. It was, the story behind the story is always crazy because everyone has had a feel of ownership for their domain and were really operational thinkers. They were not thinking more strategically and how their data could be of value to the organization outside of their operational needs. So for instance, planning and the real estate data was very much day-to-day operational data that wasn't really exposed to the organization outside of their domains. Or during our process, we discovered that there was an opioid crisis and trying to bring together folks that had a very secure domain over their data and really explaining to them how obscuring that data, but using that data for the good of the whole organization would be beneficial. So just being able to bring leaders and analysts, workers together and really try to understand that their data is not just for day-to-day operations, but their data means much more to the organization.
And it's an interesting thing, you know, we talk about and have often talked about data silos in organizations, and those can often be artificial, right? Someone has their little fiefdom that they can create a data silo in. But in county government, you have real silos, right? Because you actually have separate agencies all together who have their own data to maintain, who maybe can have their own, to some extent, their own data system. I know obviously you were working centrally there. So how do you go about trying to create a culture across many agencies with, I guess it's almost like this, you know, from the center of it all?
I really don't know how. I think we were successful, but it takes day-to-day work to bring people together, to talk about what is possible, to come up with innovative thinking or decision thinking ideas about what their data could be useful for, or getting them involved in these projects. Even the first project where we were doing the public and demographic only data, we had a cross-departmental team of people with at least a half a dozen, if not more, departments involved. And when we were doing the opioid situation, that was probably close to 15 different departments that we were getting involved. So it's more along the lines of them feeling that they're responsible for that data when we knew that the organization is responsible for that data. So governance did play a key role there. And building data sharing agreements within our own organization between departments. We certainly executed several of those for external data sources that we brought into the environment. And so we modeled that internally as well, so that we could understand the use of the data and the purpose for that data. That was something that we instituted for each project. And I've yet to mention the financial project, but we also brought financial data, because when we first looked at data, there was cross-functional data that was really core that you could find. And that was our county demographics, which we started with. And the financial data really went across the entire organization. So that felt very foundational. So mindfully, back to that vision, mindfully, we chose that as our second project, was to unlock that value of the financial data. So, and each of the departments need to understand the financial aspect of their operational day-to-day needs. So that was the idea of bringing those things together.
Also, I guess the finance people hold the purse strings for funding more work. So if they're happy.
They definitely are key to getting buy-in for projects and to have the financial ability to execute on these projects. there is the component of the ongoing expense. So we also were transformational in going from a capital expenditure to an operational expense as it relates to the cloud journey. That was something we were constantly forecasting. We had annual processes with the budget process every year. We were looking at our programs and how much money infusion we needed to grow both the technology as well as the projects that we were going to implement. And so back to the original roadmap and thinking as far ahead as you can, we were really doing a 3-year plan. And the fact that we looked at what the organization needed, we might not have done that the best way possible. We didn't start at the highest leadership level. We were working with our partners in each department. So as time went on and as value was building with the program, those budget folks and those county leaders really came to the table as it relates to the investment in what our vision was looking to accomplish.
So you built these cross-functional champions right across the all the agencies.
Right.
Agency.
And we should have started at the higher level as to what the data needs, meaning we have a county administrator and multiple deputy county administrators that are over each of the divisions of our organization. And we did land there, especially with the predictive analytics project that we moved towards.
Several times, like, hey, not everything, how we started wasn't the best, or maybe how you started, you learned some lessons. But I mean, don't we all, right? We always look back on how we did an initiative, how we started an initiative, and we always can think about some ways to do it better. But I think people can forget frequently that the most important thing is to start it. And so while you say maybe we should have started with the county administrators, but do you think that there was an advantage in going to the county administrators or other folks higher up, actually having something of substance to talk about?
Sid, you make a great point there. Perhaps the timing was more relevant in the order in which we built the capability by partnering with those that were closer to those needs and that data than the county leaders might have been for any specific use case.
When you're able to bring them some ideas that are in track, that are have traction or that are in motion, and then it's more of a feedback versus where everything is complete blue sky, it can cause issues with people wanting to build the momentum and get going.
A positive, and I'll go ahead and bridge over to our predictive project where we brought these lovely folks in to help us. And so, again, it was a budget person who had been identified as a special projects for the county to really work on a relationship with the schools and understand what it takes to build a school. It's the largest capital expenditure for local government to build a school. And Alan Carmody was responsible for a special project trying to bridge that gap. He had a feeling that there were better ways to predict out into the future. The school models that the school folks were utilizing were really good at operational 1 to 2 year forecasts, but really didn't serve the purpose for future forecasts. And our capital program is certainly a, you know, 5, 10, 15 year forecast. So he had that vision and we started working, trying to gather data. We were getting some data externally and he was our champion to agree that we should move some of our funding that we had already acquired for our program into that direction as it relates to building forecasts for schools for the future. So after getting that buy-in and putting out a statement of work, Lee and Sid and company were there working with us side by side before and during the pandemic.
Yep. Indeed. One thing that I like, and this ties into the predictive model that was built, is you mentioned a few things so far, a few kind of running themes that are protected. One of them is this idea of systems, right? Small things, keep doing it, invoking people, bring them to the table, and get them here and keep them engaged, responsible and accountable. But also from going out as well, informing people. I think people forget that sometimes projects don't succeed at first, but they do succeed when people just keep doing day in, day out, a little bit at a time, that kind of upset, that 1% each time, right? Do 1% each day and you get obviously exponentially gaining returns. Another thing that I like as well is the idea of decisions, right? Multiple times you mentioned creating a decision analyst, using this data to make decisions rather than just having it in there in dashboard, the idea of the decision. And with predictive analytics, that tends to succeed when you're trying to support a future-facing decision. So you mentioned with men's schools, how expensive they are. How are decisions made about things like schools or other kind of capital expenses? And how does the data, or how can data help to inform that decision?
The county has a very well-established capital investment program that has been longstanding for many years. And the Board of Supervisors and the school board are very involved in the budgetary components of that. That whole, we call it CIP. The CIP process is an annual process. It happens every single year. So departments ask for capital expenditure funding for various projects. And so schools, as I mentioned, was one of the most costly capital expenditure item. And there's a certain amount of money that's available for capital expenditures. And the county residents actually vote on how much we will spend on capital improvements for our county. And so prior you guys joined us, the impetus for the forecasting model was really to have a better informed decision as it relates to the forecast for the future, because the budget department had intention on asking for capital money on a ballot in future years. So the process that we put in place really helps inform that and still helps to inform that today. So we are still forecasting into the future. I think it's a 5-year forecast that's being renewed every year as it relates to schools. And it's trying to look at a lot of factors that are really difficult to bring to the table, which are, where is the growth really going to happen in our county? And so we can dive into that data component, but specifically regarding the needs of the organization, it is a really important factor as to how we're growing our county and where we will place schools, where we will put fire and police stations, where we will have new county parks or improvements being made to libraries and other services that we're providing for our residents here.
But tying this back real quick to the beginning of the conversation with Stratus. So first, when you started it, you didn't know you were going to call it Stratus, but you had a big vision, right? And just like Ed Kelly mentioned in one of our other things, naming your program is very important. So you did come up with a name for it that people can rally around. But there's this part in it, building the momentum, having the vision. Your vision was a capability vision, right? Which then allowed, because I don't imagine that you thought, oh, predicting how micro patterns of growth in the county was part of the first thing you figured Stratus would focus on.
No.
So you had a capability vision and then a little bit of like preparedness, right, by having the capability vision, and then luck coming across the right use case that we could get traction on.
And to be clear and fair, Stratus is very simple. It means strategic information sharing, and it is the entire data program. So that includes all of the collection of the data, that includes all the analyses of the data, the dashboards that are being built, and the predictions that are being made, mm-hmm, as well as some location analysis. So the program Stratus and the name of it came from the idea of a cloud. So Stratus with a U is a real particular cloud. And so I do think we named the program prior to the predictive project that we worked on, because when we started the predictive project, I tried to create a new name, which did not hold, which was a cumulus. So I put an A in front of the cumulus cloud, and a cumulus just didn't work. But so we branded it Stratus as the entire program, and the county board and board, school board and county leaders know that name and still utilize that name in marketing their budget needs and what these capital expenditures for the future are utilizing as it relates to understanding the needs of the county. And it's certainly not perfect because there's always going to be new data. There's a lot of change happening in my locality as it is other places. And hopefully those folks are looking at additional data that can inform these models to improve them for the future. So I know that Lee and company built those models for and taught our folks how they can bring additional factors to the table to build those out. I will say right now, I am not the data scientist, although I truly wanted to be one during the process.
But what I liked, Nancy, about that, the statement that you just made there, is that in many ways you were an ideal and excellent stakeholder, because most stakeholders aren't going to be expert data scientists. Some are given. Now we're at the point where data scientists are moving into positions of leadership in organizations, so that might hold in some edge cases today. But most stakeholders aren't expert statisticians, machine learning, mathematics, coding, nor should they be, right? They have other things. But you and other people I work with at the Guns and Sizzle projects take an interest in it, right? And they learn enough about it to be able to ask insightful questions to the data scientists. So it becomes very hard to blow smoke to a stakeholder who's at least taken interest and is minimally informed. And also that means then that, especially in this current wild world of AI, that some stakeholders believe AI is now magic, some magical living creature that can do magical things, whereas more informed stakeholders know its strengths and limitations. And that also leads to better ideation, better match between the organization. And so I think, Nancy, that your interest in the area and your desire to learn about it was one of the factors actually that led to this whole initiative being successful overall.
Thank you for that, Lee. I have a very inquisitive mind. I have been told that time and time again across my personal and professional life. I do think asking questions is what this data analysis and even this AI initiative, this elusive generative AI, is all about asking questions, isn't it? So I was certainly a loyal county employee who wanted the best for what we were going to deliver. And I also live here in this county. And so that's two reasons to want to do the right things. But challenging ideas is something that I think probably did help. And I want to use one example because I would be amiss not to mention the geography component of our success. And so originally we were trying to use data that didn't have location as a basis, and we certainly made great progress there, but there was always this idea of location as something that was going to be of great value. And I was responsible for a geography team or a geographic information systems team. And so a lot of the planning data, they used GIS as their basis. And so we did have some things that came to us in zones. And so at the end, the idea that schools have an area in which folks attend those schools, and the fact that census knows where people have been or will be, the idea of location-based analysis as part of our final project was important. And so I do feel like I spent a lot of energy trying to mention that geography early on, and super thankful that we turned to those ideas for our final product. And actually being able to visualize the predictions in a map format was key also to those leaders that aren't close to the data to really understand what it looked like as it relates to the county and where that growth will be, where those schools needed to go, and in future projects where those libraries and fire stations might pop up in our county.
Yeah, so you just now mentioned maps and giving some very relatable information. I think just about everybody can relate to information on, we've been using MapQuest, Google Maps. I just dated myself by saying MapQuest.
Yeah, what's so west? Yeah. What is this MapQuest thing?
So it's, we used to print directions, Lee.
Yes, we did.
Yeah. But so it's a very relatable context because the vast majority of us live in a 3D spatial world and navigate life. But that's an important aspect for stakeholder buy-in. So that GovMax big vision capability you talked about, you may not have known everywhere you wanted to go. You saw common problems across the county. Every department has this. And there's this opportunity to cast a big vision to tie departments together. So how important, or what were some of the both wins you had in getting stakeholders bought in? So you mentioned, alluded to that a little bit, with being able to show the map. And what, or you may, you can start with what reticent stakeholders and why were they reticent? And what was hard about convincing them on the strata vision?
Believe it was harder at predictive analytics stage. It was harder to convince the workers who were involved with the data than it was to really convince the stakeholders. I do think there was a bit of that magical component there, but they also were able to value the process. So you guys were really good at identifying that process in a really clear way for leaders to understand the scientific side of that, where you're testing different factors. Because talking back before you came on board, we were talking about factors that relate to why schools are built where they are. And so coming up, there can be so many variety of factors that align to that. And that's where maybe I can bring back that geography and that census data was really about place. And so area, and we identified our data as it relates to these areas. And that's, a board of supervisors member is responsible for an area of the county. And so to be able to illustrate that to them, they know in their heart what's going on in their community, but to be able to have a model indicate to them that they're in the right ballpark, or that they now know that we're using student data as well as real estate data as well as census tract data in order to identify where growth is predicted to happen in out years. I think that was a very easy win for us at that point. During the process, getting folks to agree to this factor or that factor, which thing might be the ultimate answer to that prediction, was a little harder, is what I'll say.
Yeah. And that's in many ways where the beauty of data can help, right? Because we're all going to come at it without having that data. We're all going to look at our personal experiences on those factors and what influences, right? I was laughing with Lee at the time when y'all were deep in some of these discussions, and I was literally getting emails about the rezoning for our kids' schools, right? And all the things, all the people that were up in arms, no, my older sibling, their older sibling goes to that school. You can't rezone us yet because of this. And Lee, I'm forwarding all these emails so you can see the complications and like trying to do school zoning. So
it is very sensitive topic.
Very sensitive topic. Yeah. And they finally rezoned recently. And so we're happy about it. Other people are not.
Bringing in experts is always a value add for a large organization such as Chesterfield County. So not only did we have expert data scientists with us, but I think a key turning point was when we actually went to UVA, which is the University of Virginia here in the state of Virginia. Anyway, we went to the Weldon Cooper Center for Public Service there and spoke to the demographers after there was a bit of a census delay in 2020 due to a certain pandemic, I believe. And so we had a great conversation with the primary demographers there, and they had high levels of concern about the census, detailed census tract data as it relates to being able to understand where people are. And because of some obscurity that they added in, I don't have all those details with me right now. But the point is, we had a grand conversation with the demographers at UVA, and we were able to discuss with them what our data-rich patterns were, the fact that we had 20-plus years of real estate data to understand trends in our county. And they certainly were sharing their knowledge of how that was more valuable than the more obscure data that you would get from the census. So having that information and being able to bring that back to our teams and share that really solidified our approach that we were on the right track and that we had something that was solid and good for the future.
So be bold, have a big vision, and then you found like a couple of other smaller use cases or different things at first, but then found the schools and the forecasting on the population piece, and then went very far with that. So on this, you mentioned Stratus was a big capability vision for the entire county. And so what were some of those silos that y'all had to break down across those different agencies in the county? One of the things that Lee and I have worked a lot both across PubSec and commercial. And so one of the things we remind folks that are just now coming into PubSec for the first time, on one hand, you can look organizationally and think it's like a large company with different departments, but usually there's laws and other things that restrict and have to go to committees and go to the public before certain things can happen. You don't have that in private companies. So what were some of those bits that y'all had to overcome to hit like this capability vision that Stratus had of sharing data, sharing insights, getting to the more decision analyst, decision-making pieces?
I can think of each of the projects had those types of challenges, every single one of them. Certainly, yep. Being able to leverage any external data that the state of Virginia has also had those challenges. Mm. At the time, their first chief data officer for the state of Virginia was in place and working on trying to unlock value of data across the state agencies as well, which is even a harder lesson than what we were learning. So really executing sharing agreements and agreements that the technology folks, as a technologist also, we have full access to all data. But the idea of having levels of data where you have raw data that's only available to a select few, and then data that has been scrubbed and anonymized at another level available for the rest of the organization or for a department or for sharing with another department. Those kinds of things, being able to describe that and offer that as options, that's the only way we got student data where the students actually physically are living. And so there are still rules there, and certainly there are a lot of security rules around students and juvenile individuals. And so we have to obscure if there's less than 10 or 15 people in a particular location, you can't divulge that information because that could tie back to a real privacy concern. So just working through all of these security requirements on the financial side, it was more difficult to get the HR folks agreeing to share employee-related data for various statistics such as employment rates and resignation rates and things like that, because that is very private as it relates to individuals and individual details. So again, having access to the raw data in the system of record is not what we were building. We were building something that took relevant data, not raw data, relevant shareable data, not the raw data, to be consumed into decision analytics dashboards or other things for the good of the entire organization. And that's how that worked with the Department of Health, for instance. We wanted birth rate information, and they, of course, did not provide us with the raw data at that system of record level. They gave us a collection of data that was meaningful and useful, but would ensure the privacy of that data for those residents and citizens of the state.
Awesome.
As I was a part of the county organization over 10 to 15 years, we were in the top 10 category. We were number one county, digital county in the United States of a medium-sized county, at least two or three times, but top 10 all of that time. And that attributed to a variety of things, but part of these programs were certainly a part of that. There's also an organization called the National Association of Counties, or NACO, and we won at least two awards for the Stratus program specifically. One of them was called, I wrote it myself, called Forecast for Communities. And I had spoken on that at a conference once, or was planning to speak on that at a conference. And then what did we have? A pandemic, so that didn't happen either. But yes, very proud of that. I'm very thankful for all the wonderful partnerships that we had through the source of the success here. And I would be amiss not to mention Microsoft. I know there are other cloud providers out there. We landed on Microsoft Azure because of the support that we got from the sales teams and the technology folks, the pre-sales technology folks. I got a lot of free answers from them through many years and lots of proof of concepts. We leveraged those technology stacks for our folks for learning purposes, using credits on a regular basis. And we did, Lee, I know you were probably going to go to this, but we had a vision to build capabilities or technology capabilities in our personnel. And so another reason to bring experts to the table is to teach, and no one better than Lee to teach data science to our folks. And happy to say that they're, I think, successful in continuing that journey. They certainly were while I was still employed with Chesterfield County. And so that's the beauty of seeing people grow and offering them career capacity for their futures as well. So, and to be able to support what we built for the organization moving forward. You buy software product from a vendor and you get that vendor support for the life of that product that you have. When you build something, you need to build the capability to sustain that yourself. Yeah. And I think we were successful in doing that.
And we did check online that Stratus is still running. You can go to the website. You can look at the predictions for this fiscal year. They are up there.
Yes, they are. I was happy to see that projected 2028 and 2029 school boundaries and the growth capacity for that. And it's also referenced in the budget document for the coming year.
And that's one of the things that can be fun about like visions that are more capabilities than just individual projects. Like, I know the engineers have a certain pride in going by and seeing a bridge that they built and that bridge being used and things, but not all of us get to build a bridge or build some kind of lasting monument or artifice that is very publicly seen, but we can have impacts on programs, things, and visions. Then the interesting thing here is I'm sure you're both happy and a little sad having cast the Stratus vision. Now you've retired from the county, and that vision is now becoming other people's, right? Like they are going to go grow and change and modify that. So is that a little bit of surreal for you seeing, as Lee mentioned, it's still live, but now you are seeing other people engage and act and create and add to this vision?
No, actually, that was a shared vision. It was not, I feel like there was an original insight and that I might have a gift to move towards some level of goals. And I have that persistence that Lee was mentioning, but it was never my vision or my goal. It was our vision. And I wanted it to be everyone's vision. And so you worked really hard to get those technologists and those stakeholders to align to that vision and to go back to the table and say, we've done this, but we would like to do more. And so what I hope and what I will find out soon at the picnic that I will go back to is where are they growing the program? What are their current 3-year roadmap visions? Where are they taking data for the good of Chesterfield County organization at large? How are they improving these models? Are they doing new models for other arenas or other areas of our organization?
Nancy, what are you up to these days? That, as Lee mentioned, is quite the laundry list on interests and activities. You're at Epic Tech Advisors now, but what other interesting pursuits are you doing that people should follow?
I have an interest in giving back to STEM specifically as it relates to minorities, and I am planning to teach again this fall at VCU. And so I have a few little irons in the fire as it relates to some organizations. One is a startup here in Richmond that I won't name since I haven't established my capability with them, but it is a organization that is in a learning space. So I think I have an interest in moving towards tech ed or as it relates to being able to do something in the education space. I have always had a passion for this idea of girls in technology and what happens to them in middle school. And I think this organization could be a good fit there. I have been following what a Women in Technology group is doing as it relates to advanced AI and generative AI. And so I'm trying to figure out how to get myself involved there. I know the chair of VCU is very interested in how that impacts learning at a university level and how to leverage that versus ensure that is not something that is hands off to students. So those are the components that I think I'm sending my energy in professionally. And yes, personally, I do love to ski. I'm going to be taking a group of people to Vail, Colorado next year. And I just came back from Banff, Canada this past year. But in between, I do to play a lot of tennis. I'm not very good at it, but I keep getting better at it. So I'll be playing this afternoon. And yeah, I really appreciate you guys having me on your podcast. I certainly have a lot of admiration for what you guys are doing. And perhaps I will learn a little from you as I have established my small company and what I can be doing to really build that up.
Nancy, thank you for your time today. It's been great having you on.
Thank you so much, Sid and Lee.